Welcome back. This is episode 6 of the podcast. And today we're going to discuss the shoot we've just finished, including retouching, which we've literally finished just before starting this. My first shoot as an agent, which is happening tomorrow. The quality of work and when it's good enough. Life as a photographer for both myself and Rob, who has a slightly different setup to me, which is probably more relatable, I'd guess, to the majority of people. Instagram's using your images for AI and all these ridiculous posts we've been seeing going around, and the Insta360 debacle. And yet again, I'm joined here with Rob.
Howdy.
By Rob. There we go. We've got Rob here again because he's been helping me fix stuff. So we'll dive right into it, because literally what you've just finished doing is the burger shoot, which you just edited, and it's all finished now, isn't it?
Yeah, all finished, delivered.
Super. And I've just done my standard post-shoot delivery thing of sending it to my art buyer, Karen, my agent, Pete, and the food stylist. And it is a Sunday. It's also Father's Day. So yeah, putting in that extra shift today, and hopefully they're all, you know, happy with the work because it's going live on Monday. This is a personal project. This is a test shoot that I should have done months ago, but we've been so busy I've not had the chance to test as much as usual. And the shoot was okay. There was a lot of post work. There always is with burgers. If you're watching the video, I'll get them to pop up on the screen, I guess. We can do that, can't we?
Yeah, a bit of some PRK.
Do a bit of an insert here. So if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see it there. If you're watching it on one of the podcasting streams, then probably head over to my Instagram, because I'd imagine my website update will be a little bit tardy on this one. But yeah, so we finished the shoot. The shoot went fine. I did a static camera filming of the whole day. That'll end up over on my Patreon. Not the whole thing, because nobody needs to watch 10 hours of me swearing and stuff, but I'll cut it down and explain the process of it all. But yeah, from a researching point of view, Rob, what was that loud bang?
That's a good question.
There was a loud bang in the room. Everyone still alive?
I don't see anything expensive on the floor, so that's good.
And my phone just went off. Oh, it's Karen. It's Karen. Let's see what Karen says about the work before you tell us what... I'll tell you what, you tell us what you've done to the images in terms of posts. I'll see what Karen's saying about it.
Yeah, so there's the standard Scott treatment, really, to kick off with. That's sort of balance everything, level everything, get all your verticals nice and vertical without the converging lines. And then things like the burgers, with the seeded buns, for example, some were a bit sparse in areas, so we needed to... generate a few new sesame seeds to give it more kind of even look. Also, like fluffing your favourite pillow, making the buns look nice and plump and fat, rather than leaning on one side. Is if anyone's ever bought burger buns from a supermarket, you'll know they're always squashed.
Yeah, it's horrific.
So trying to find like one good bun is like almost an impossibility, really.
Yeah, and even like the bun we started with was the best from the best from the selection.
Yeah,
it's not like we just chose any old bun. The stylist had gone out shopping for ages to find good ones. And then we've chosen the best out of them. But they're stacked on top of each other. They're soft brioche buns stacked on top of each other, or sesame seed buns stacked on top of each other.
Yeah,
gravity's not kind.
Literally, unless you go to an artisan baker, that's the only way you're going to get the perfect bun, I think.
Exactly. And for the look we're going for fast food look. We're going for the sort of, you know, just this is... you know, McDonald's, Burger King, KFC vibe, not gourmet burger. But yeah, so we shot a chicken burger, a cheeseburger, and a beef burger, and then we did a shot in real life of all three of them together rather than just sticking them together in post. And the big difference in this shoot was that there was no color. Not that it was a black and white image, but we didn't have the bright, vibrant backgrounds, because I'm trying something slightly different, and I'd say we had limited success in it being successful.
Yeah, I mean, we went for kind of a muted kind of off-white, light grey background as opposed to your usual sort of bold pop art style. So what it does, particularly in the case of the cheeseburger, you've got the red of the ketchup, you've got the yellow of the cheese, and that really pops against that
really
dull background.
Yeah.
So that really becomes the centre point of that. And likewise with the chicken burger, that nice golden crispy chicken patty, that really jumps out. Because it's not conflicting or fighting with any other colours and on the background. So I think from that point of view, I think it works great.
Yes, but however, the bacon burger, which was brown on brown on brown on beige, not so good. So the learning has been, yes, the idea works in that I want to try and move away from the pop art, bright and colourful thing because it's just being overdone now. And I want to shoot cleaner, simpler images, but I still want the colour in the shot. So it's all about subject matter choice. So... when we do our next test shoot, for example, if we're doing sandwiches, it won't be a tuna mayo sandwich because that will look horrific. But, you know, there's other sandwiches like, you know, a nice ploughman's lunch. For those who aren't in the UK, don't know what a ploughman's lunch is, go and Google it. It is delightful. Nothing says British lunchtime like a ploughman's. But something like that would work really well. So it's about choosing the right subject matter. And I think I want to work on the lighting a bit more as well. We shot it all with a reflector. I think I'm going to go for the, I don't know what it's called, the really fancy modifier. I've got the super hard light source point doodah. Which someone in a YouTube comment recently said, well, if it's a source point, it doesn't matter the angle of light you have to the subject because it's a point source of light. It doesn't matter. And they are correct in the, that was an interesting point because they are factually correct, but no source point of light source in photography is actually a source point. Yeah, because there's always curvature of a tube and there's still a direction at play.
Yeah, and if you've got any form of modifier, unless you're running bare ball, but
yeah, I mean this comes to an extent, black modifier, which should make it, but it's still not. It's a point source in as much as it can be, but it's not a true point source. It's the same with parabolics. Most parabolics are not parabolics. Most parabolics are softboxes, but even the good parabolics aren't true parabolics. If they were, we'd be lighting very differently. They're as close as they can get to it. So there's always like a scientific answer to something and then a here's how it actually works answer.
Yeah, in the real world.
Yes, in the real world. It's always slightly different. So Rob's done my retouching. Lots of tidying up of the burgers and buns and sesame and all the rest of it. Yeah, a bit of tidy up a background.
And paint on plinths.
Yeah, paint on plinths. So paint texture's a nightmare. We use foam rollers as well to get it as minimal as possible. We will soon have a spray shop in here, which would be good with a new studio build. Once that's in place, that'll be nice. We can literally get a nice airbrush finished with it all.
Yeah.
But that's going to be probably, what, Christmas?
Yeah, so in the meantime, sand it and repaint it with
rollers. Just keep repainting it with rollers. Just keep everything.
Fix it in post.
Yeah, we all like a bit of fix it in post. I like a bit of fix it in post. How much fix it in post was on this shoot?
Probably about 8 hours over the 4 images, I'd say.
That's not bad.
It's about right, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take that. That's not bad.
It's a strong day's work, really.
Yes, yeah, so we did an initial edit last weekend, and then this weekend we did the finessing.
Yes.
Which is interesting because I would say by the end of last weekend, we were happy with the results, and we probably made as much of a change to the images this weekend as we did prior to it.
Yeah, but you actually, for once, had the luxury of being able to sort of step away and revisit it, and you'd always see something different.
Because this does not happen in commercial jobs.
No, I mean, but in fairness, on a commercial job, typically speaking, you'll have either the agent of or the client themselves on set signing the work off as you go.
Yeah.
So if the client signed it off, everyone's happy.
Well, hopefully. I think like the last job we did together on a commercial job, we edited on the day and delivered very late that night.
Yes.
Which is really fast turnaround. I can't even remember what the shots were, to be honest.
It was a late one. I do remember that.
It would have been a late one.
It was biscuits.
That was it, biscuits. We shot biscuits.
Many biscuits.
Yeah. Oh, we had models in and everything, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we had a pre-light day, which is my favourite type of shoot when you get a pre-light day. It just takes the stress levels right down. You come in for like a day or half a day with just your assistants and just sort of like get the first shot dialed in. So following day, 8 a.m. on the dot, first shot begins. Whereas normally, turn up at 8 and then you hope to get first shot done by lunchtime if you're lucky.
We're on pretty good pace. You did kneecap me a bit by leaving the 20 image gifts to the very end.
Yes. that was a bit of a faux pas on my part.
Which is, you know, why you got to enjoy a frothy beverage while I was there.
I did have a few beers afterwards. One back on the Fanta Lemon today, pretending it's summer holidays time, despite the fact we're getting 50 days of rain in the UK. So poor Teddy the dog. We're going to do a dog camera for this. Mate, let us know in the comments below if you want a dog camera, because he sat in here whilst we're doing this. It's my 15-week puppy who comes everywhere with me. He's also the reason that my car is currently destroyed and is now being sold at the end of this week to buy a more practical dog.
A more practical daddy wagon for the dog,
which is very sad for me. I've not even managed to take that car on a shoot. With all the nice storage capacity. Well, my new one's got better storage capacity. Yeah,
you know what? He's more suited to the job, in fairness.
It is indeed. But yes, there we go. Poor Teddy in the very stinky Mercedes.
Poor Teddy, I see what he did there.
I'm on it today. So we've finished that. And that's all good. But I'm on my first day of work. well, not first day of work. I'm on my first day on set as an agent tomorrow. So I'm heading on the train down to London, bright and early. I'd imagine this is coming out whilst I'm on set, actually. This is probably going live on Monday, isn't it?
Most likely, because the goal is to edit this after...
Oh, no, because we've still got episode 5 that hasn't gone out yet, so this might not be then. I'd probably have done it. Hopefully it's gone well. But it's my first day on set with one of my photographers. I signed them a few weeks ago, and we've gotten the job already, which is great. It's always a nice win. It's a cool campaign, and yeah, it's a 2-day shoot, so I'm going down... make sure everything happens, make sure everything's good, negotiate anything that needs negotiating. And I'm also meeting some other photographers after the shoot to look at their books to see if I want to sign them as well. One of which I'm particularly excited to see. So yeah, first day agenting. I don't think I can say anything else about it really because it's all embargoed.
Yes.
But there'll be a celebratory drink at Circe's before I head home, which is the champagne bar at the train station I go to. Not all train stations in the UK have a champagne bar, but this one does. So
it's London after all.
Yes, we do hit it up on the way back and probably spend our entire day's earnings. But yeah, it's quite exciting to be on set. And it's really interesting because it's a food shoot and a fashion shoot all together. So I'm going to be seeing a quite traditional food photographer on the first day and my fashion photographer on the second day. And it'll be interesting to see how another food photographer works because I've never assisted. So I've never seen anybody else doing what I do, ever. And we're in his own studio for that day and then in a rental for the second day. So it'll be interesting to see how many things I've been doing wrong all these years.
Yeah, or affirm things that you've done correct.
I think it'll more be the prior, see what I've messed up over the years. Yeah, it's quite exciting going down to London, I always think, being like a small town. We live in Leicester, it's a city, but it is a town, really. It's quite...
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you get to St Pancras, which is the most popular station that you go to from Leicester, the minute you step off the train, you know you're in a different world.
Yeah, I like it. But I also like coming back from... I love going to London. I think a week is my limit, having lived there briefly in the past. I don't think I'd ever want to live there again. I think I'm...
No, I mean, I spent, you know, the better part of... 8-9 years as a travelling salesman working around London. I just couldn't get on with the fake people. That's my biggest issue, is that every time you sort of find yourself in a hotel of an evening and somebody inevitably will wander over and want to talk to you, only to tell you how well they're doing, how much money they earn, and what car they drive.
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of that going on in London. I mean, we live in the Soho bubble in London, so we go into London, I normally get off the tube at Chinatown, walk through, and then go to Soho and live on Dean Street. In the bars and places there. Yeah. And everyone's quite friendly there and quite nice. Was that another tumble in our studio?
I think it was that way.
Oh, good. Thank goodness. Sounds like the walls are falling down today. It's a Sunday as well. I don't know what everyone's doing here. Obviously, everyone's avoiding going to like their Father's Day events.
No, I did see your neighbour wheeling stillages of things about earlier.
Oh, geez. There we go. Yeah, we've got a brewery kind of place next door to us. And because the European football's coming up, they're all big on the sales. But yeah, I've also had a load of new portfolios sent in as well for the agent stuff to represent. I've gone through them all. I've not applied to anyone, I'm afraid, because I haven't had time. But yeah, I've received your work. It's for those who do want to send me work in to look at representation, it's scott@agentatlarge.co.uk. Don't send it anywhere else because it won't find me. And definitely don't phone my number up. That's it. I've had a lot of that this week. There's been a lot of people phoning me. I don't know. Would you, if you didn't know me, would you phone me?
No. I mean, it's the generation we're in now that we've become telephobic. It's if your phone rings, it's like, who's this? Who's calling me? I'll cancel that. If it's important, they'll leave a voicemail.
You see, I think I'm the opposite. I love talk. I spend probably, 4 hours a day on the phone, I reckon. But what bugs me is when someone phones me up with a question they could have emailed me and now I have to deal with it when I'm already doing something else. That's what irks me. It's like I might be in the middle of like doing a treatment and someone phones me up to ask me about something which could have been an email and isn't. If someone phones me up going, oh, Scott, there's been this issue for the shoot tomorrow because it's urgent, that's good. But if it's like, could you let me know about something which just has no...
Yeah, it's your availability as well, sort of, you know, about things that you juggle on a daily basis.
Yeah, I feel very much like I've been juggling recently. My Friday was like one of those days out of a nightmare. You know, when you're trying to get someone, you never get there. Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, this is... Do you know what? we'll do this now and we'll dive straight into life as a photographer, because I think this is a great example of life not going well as a photographer. But on Friday, I woke up and I'd got a haircut appointment at 10 a.m. So I was like, brilliant. I'm going to take the dog for a walk, get to work, do a couple of hours work, and then go and get my hair cut, come back to work, crack on through the day, home by 6, 7 p.m. at the latest. I wake up and I get, my partner's like, oh, can you wait in for this package? I'm like, yeah, I can work from home for the package. Look at Teddy and he's got a bit of an injury on his side. And I was like, oh, he needs a vet. So I phoned the vets up, spent ages trying to get a vet's appointment. Finally get a vet's appointment, which is after my haircut. I was like, that's fine. That's how it is. So I've not walked Teddy now because I'm waiting for delivery. I've gone to get my haircut. There's no parking spaces. It was a nightmare. I then took Teddy to the vets, all good, got his medicine, and went to a different vet than normal, but his favourite doctor was there for some bizarre reason, so he was a happy chap. Got back, I was like, right, I'm going to quickly walk him before I go to work, so he's not all, like, hemmed up all day. Took him for a walk, we walked around the park for 20 minutes. Within eyesight of the car, he found a fox poo, like a massive mound of it, and he rolled, and he rolled and rolled in it, and it was probably about 20 metres away from me at this point, just rolling in fox poo. He looked like a panda bear when he came out, just black and white, and the smell. So we're now driving home with the windows down. I've got to now bath him in the back garden. So I wash him, shampoo him up, wash it all off, dry him. Then it's like, I'll give him his medicine and everything else. I get to the studio at 4:30 p.m. and I've got an 8 hours schedule of work. And I left like just before midnight on a Friday. And it's just, it's a very... People think working for yourself means you can be your own boss. And they're like, oh, yeah, but you can just nip into the vets to go and take your dog in whenever. I was like, I can nip into the vets and take my dog in because I have to ask for time off. But when I get back, that day is still there.
Yeah, you still have your schedule to be done that day.
And having just done the new marketing and business workshop, we do a lot of work on scheduling your working weeks. I think a lot of us don't do anything. And it's interesting. So first of all, Rob, you have a day job, which is...
I do. I have a regular Clark Kent day job as well.
Clark Kent day job, 9-to-5. Is it a 9-to-5?
No.
No. Is it a 24/7?
Yeah. It's at the moment. It seems to be about 6:30 to 8:30 is how it seems to be rolling at the moment. But that's dealing with sort of factories in the Far East and what have you as well. Yeah. So obviously, they're on a bit of a different timeline, and you've got a very narrow window between when they're working and you're working. So you have to maximise that and sort of pull that forward from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what have you. So yes, that's...
So before I go into what I do for my work week, how do you work out your photography and videography and being here time? What does your working week as a photographer look like? So I think this is what most people probably do. Okay.
So my life is now owned and run entirely from GCal.
Yeah.
If it's not in my GCal, it ain't happening. It's as simple as that. You know, when someone says, oh, Rob, can we do such and such? I said, I don't know. Let me ask Google and see if I'm available. And that's really the only way you can kind of keep yourself sane and make sense of everything. Because you can assume that, you know, your normal working day is your normal working day. And that's a given, sort of five days a week. Occasionally that might roll into a little bit of weekend work, but that's the exception rather than the norm. And then, of course, auxiliary side of that then comes in at the weekend. So you have to go, right, what can you do on a Friday? What can you do on a Saturday? What can you do on a Sunday? And in amongst that, you have to try and schedule, you know, do I really want to do this? And do I want some free time this weekend? You know, things to do on the house, you know, spend time with my partner, et cetera, et cetera. So it's cutting a fine balance. And yesterday I had the day off and I got to go to the barber, as you can see. I had a nice
looking trim.
Had a nice fresh trim. So that was, I scheduled that in the day, but I was working last night shooting the cabaret at the Y Theatre.
Yep.
So I was working of an evening.
Oh, we were just round the corner at the Little Theatre.
Oh, yes, the actual Little Theatre. Yeah. You should come over, mate.
I know. Show. Oh, okay.
And that's one of my residents. We do that sort of a quarterly for the House of India Star. So there we go. Give her a little plug.
Yeah, yeah.
Great show. One of the best cabarets in Leicester for sure. So I get to do that. And then I was here then this morning.
Yeah, Sunday morning, bright and early, 8 a.m., winning at life. So how do you decide? Obviously, I know that you take days off sometimes when we've got like a big campaign.
Yeah, I'll book some sort of annual leave to be able to be on set with you. where required.
But for weekend stuff, how do you decide if you're doing it or not? What's the criteria?
I mean, for yourself, obviously it's fairly straightforward. I mean, I work with you two days a month, basically. You know, alternating sort of weekends, and that's fine. I look at that as a residency. So 2 days of my 8 available weekend days are always allocated for yourself. And then the other stuff, it's you have to consider, what is the job? What does it pay? Because that's important, because, you have, at the end of the day, you have got to get paid. Yeah. And then you consider, do I really want to do it? And is there something better I could be doing with my time? Be that, housework, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I don't do the sleeping thing so much.
Not into it.
No, I mean, 4 hours a day, man, I'm pretty good with that. That's enough for me. And that does help, actually. Because my partner generally goes to bed long before midnight, and then I've got a few hours to kind of decompress, rationalise my thoughts, and this helps. You sort of compartmentalise everything, so I know what I'm doing the following day. So when I can get up, I'm like, bam, straight on it, because I've already got a clue in my head what my next day will be. Now, whether that's the regular grind, and again, there's things that you have to pick up over the weekend. For example, we did some work on the burger retouching during the course of the week.
So
we spent a bit of time in a couple of evenings sort of doing that and other things that you've got going on, because that's the holdover is depending on what the job is that you're shooting at the weekend. For example, if you're working with someone, it's just a straight shoot and drop where you hand the footage over to the client and you've got nothing else to do with it.
Winner.
That's absolute win. Almost never happens. But when
just to touch on that, photographers, I've seen loads of memes recently, like chefs don't hand over their raw food. Why should photographers hand over their raw files? I love when a client wants raw files. It is the dream job. It's like, oh, you just want me to take pictures and get paid? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. No editing, no revisions, no headaches afterwards. It's just like shoot and drop.
Yeah.
That's even better in video.
That is a goal. With video, everything, it's the fastest you can do any video, typically speaking, is in real time.
Yeah.
And that's the absolute best case scenario.
No, exactly. I mean, like if this podcast would end up being like an hour-ish, like it's 3 cameras synced up and you've got to watch an hour's footage back.
Yeah, and every time you make a cut and want to move it slightly, you have to stop. So that hour podcast, with a three multicam as we're running today.
We've got 4 today.
We've actually got 4, yes. Cam. We've got the little mini cam as well.
So you can see our setup.
That's going to sort of take, I would say, about 2 hours as a minimum to kind of get through that and get that, squared away.
Yeah, that's probably a good assumption. Are you happy dropping raw files off to people?
Yeah, I mean, I say it almost never happens. It's unless it's for, say if you're shooting an event work, tends to be the exception to that, like a festival or, music festival, whatever the case may be. They literally want to be having those images ready to post that evening on, Instagram, Facebook, to promote. If it's a 2 or 3 day festival, they want day one images on day one.
Yeah.
So you use that to promote day two, and then day two is to promote day three. And then day three to say thank you all for coming, see you again next year. So that's one of the few times where there's not much filtering or goes on. I mean, again, you'll do a preliminary grade, sort of bring everything into, decent sharpness, contrast, etc. And then you'll just sync that across all the images.
Yeah, that's what we do. We grade each shot, like black point, white point, shadows, highlights, saturation. Don't tend to sharpen, but if we're using clarity as a creative tool, we'll add that at that point as well. And then we just export as 16-bit TIFFs.
Yeah.
Let them cry later when they get the file.
Because if they're asking for the images immediately, now with the best will in the world, you don't have time to sit there and go through 1,000 images and tweak the exposure, a third of a stop on every image. You just have to kind of take a baseline. If they need the images that fast. Now, if they don't need it that fast, that's exactly what you'll do. You go through everything to make sure everything's absolutely tip top. But when the things are right, at the end of the day, I don't know if you've had the jobs where they've literally given you the SD card and say, give us this back at the end of the day.
Yeah, especially for video work. Back in the day, like event video, they've given you a camera and a card and gone, go shoot. I'm like, cool. Most of our clients get given a T7 drive at the end of a shoot with the entire shoot on it. There's a few ways it can go. One is they just want the raw files. Brilliant. We give them a drive and go, goodbye. Thank you very much. Pay the money. You're done. The other is they have a really tight deadline and we give them the whole catalog so they can go and play with it whilst we're retouching. And they might want to try different compositions really roughly and go, look, can you do it like this? So they've got a working copy of what we've got. Yeah. And the other reason we do it is just so, heaven forbid, my backup fails, which is pretty robust. We've got, what, 3 physical copies and 2 different Backblaze copies.
Yeah, but I say then the cloud.
Yeah, twice on the cloud. And it's in my Dropbox. So it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's never happened where you've lost anything, so.
No, we've never lost a job. But yeah, anyway, sorry, I interrupted you midway through explaining things just because I thought it was an interesting point. And I bet now you can't remember where you were when you're...
Absolutely not a clue.
Ah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So we're talking about delivering shots as raw.
Yeah. In terms of, you know, as I say,
is the job worth it?
In terms of what I decide to do with the time available to me, which is my evenings and my weekends, you have to draw that kind of life work balance. I'm probably too more into the work balance. I mean, certainly my partner will agree with that statement. But again, I've got things I want to do. I've got goals and, you know, things to do and people to see, sort of thing. So I do push myself down that route, and I don't take on everything, but everything that has a value, for example, if that kind of makes sense. Not necessarily just talking about monetary value. It's just like weddings and stuff. People kind of look at it as a bit of a cash cow. I'll be shooting my first wedding on Friday of the year. I mean, I don't even advertise that I do weddings.
Yeah.
You know, so the ones that I do tend to be friends or referrals from friends, and they tend to be sort of, you know, my kind of people. You know, in those circumstances, you're happy to do it. But then you've got other ones where we've been approached by, you know, the bridezilla who wants it, quote unquote, to look like the front page of a Vogue magazine. And then you have to explain how long it takes to make a shot look like the front page of a Vogue magazine. And, you know, it's not possible, you know, and they've given you 4 different A4 pages of the formals, the group shots, and they've allocated 20 minutes in the schedule to do it. And it's one of the most stressful things you will ever do, especially on the video side, because, you know, you've not only got the image to worry about, but you've got the sound.
Yeah.
And if that's wrong, everything's wrong. You know, there's no coming back from that. So, you know, again, tech and kit has got better, you know, lovely mics with internal recording now. Thank God, absolute godsend. So, you know, it does take the stress out of it a little bit.
Yeah, but I wouldn't do weddings again. It's just not, well, if my mate said, can you photograph my wedding? I'd consider it. So I'm actually going to my best mate's wedding later this year. If he said, could you take some pictures of this part of the wedding? I wouldn't do the whole thing. He wouldn't ask me to do the whole thing. But if he said, could you shoot this bit for me? I'd be like, yeah, of course I can. Question is, do I take a camera to my best mate's wedding?
If you've been asked to, yes. If not, I wouldn't.
Yeah, but would I want one?
It's a toughie, because if things go wrong, and I've seen them go wrong at a wedding, because it's always, I don't know if you find this, but because you, as a photographer yourself, when you see the photographer at the wedding, you're always kind of a bit nosy and kind of interested in what he's doing, just kind of sort of looking at how people work. And I remember one instance, I mean, it's the worst thing I've ever saw. The guy rocked up with his camera, with his new Fuji, whatever it is, you know, interesting choice for weddings, because normally you have something a bit robust that can take a bit of a beating, but again, it's just a tool, doesn't really matter what you've got. Of course, you know, you've got old Uncle George, who's an enthusiast photographer, talking to the photographer about it, and, you know, so talking about his fancy new camera and all the rest of it, and all that was fine till about 5 o'clock, and then the photographer locked himself in his car. Turns out he's been shooting in demo mode all day, there's no card in the camera. Oh. And it's not a single, because it came initially, you take the shot and it comes up, you've got a one shot buffer in the camera.
Yeah.
And that's it. Now, as awful as that is, and it's pretty bad, it's a very difficult thing to come back from. The correct move would have been to just carry on like as if nothing had happened.
Yes, don't ruin the wedding.
You're going to have that conversation with them, and it's awkward when it is, but on the day of it isn't. And again, just had a complete meltdown, and everyone sort of worked out very quickly something had gone wrong with the pictures. And the only topic of conversation from 6 o'clock onwards was, I can't believe what happened with your photographer. Oh, it literally ruined the entire day. So
yeah, you know. Did they end up getting sued?
Oh, it must have been sued. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. And you've always sort of taught me belt and braces, especially with weddings, because it's the one thing you can't reshoot.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you're doing a shoot for a band and you f*** it up, you know what?
Don't matter.
My bad. You've got another gig coming up. I'll do that one. Happy days, you know, you can get over the world. But full weddings is a bit of a thing. And if you look at the series of errors that brought that particular photographer to that particular issue, night before, you check your stuff, you format your memory card, start with a fresh card. Had he done that, he would have said, no card in camera. Oh, that's lucky, better pop one in. And then only shooting on one camera, because what if that camera did have a card in it, but broke on the third shutter actuation, which you have to assume 100% happened. So you've got that. So, you know, again, typically you would always shoot a wedding with at least two cameras. Typically I'll bring three with me, leave one in the
car.
I've got two on me either side.
Wide
in the telly. So, you know, you've got most things covered, and you swap as much as you can so that if a card corrupts, hasn't happened, and, you know, touch wood that it doesn't, but at least you've got something on the wides or the, you know,
exactly.
You've got something to come away from that. And, you know, and it also, the biggest schoolboy error I would say of all of this is gone to shoot a wedding with a camera he'd only owned for less than about 3 or 4 days. There's no way you know that camera well enough in 4 days to go into a situation which, as you well know, is fast moving. You've got to be on it, you know, and you've got to be able to literally almost like a Marine, be able to operate it blindfolded. So use something familiar to you.
Yeah, and I think like the difference is like with what I do, I can turn up set with a camera I've never used before because there's loads of time. The moment's gone forever. And, you know, it's just like complex, but like I wouldn't shoot a wedding on my Fuji having owned it for like 6 months because obviously if I shoot daily, it'd be different, but I don't know that camera well enough. I'd still go and use a 5D.
Yeah, you bust out Old Faithful for events like
5D Mark II, 1250 ISO, bang it out all day. Images would be beautiful. I shoot a wedding on a 35 prime and an 85 prime. One on each camera, then for the ceremony, 35 prime and the 70 to 200, just to make sure I can definitely get everything.
Yeah, I mean, I typically swap the 35 out for a 24 mil because, you know, like the Sigma 24 prime. Yeah. It's a lovely, lovely lens as well.
See, that wasn't available when I shot weddings. The option was a 24 1.4L by Canon, which was spendy, well out of my price range at least. But yeah, so that's how Rob manages his work-life balance. Mine is very similar, in that I'm a photographer Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And then I'm a YouTuber as my side hustle. I say it's very similar. It's the exact opposite. Side hustle YouTube is weekends and evenings. So today being Sunday, we're on the YouTube train.
And you have small people to cram into your schedule.
I've got three small people and a dog and parent that needs, you know, help and stuff like that as well. So yeah, it's quite a bang up schedule. But I still managed to leave early on a Tuesday to go and do, you know, school events afterwards. Mm-hmm. I drive to, what, 4 different school clubs a week for the kids. Up until getting Teddy, I was doing the school drop-off every morning, but he's a bit too young to go on the school run because he'll just flatten all the kids. He's not quite well-trained enough yet, but I'll be back to doing the school run in the mornings as well. And then, yeah, I don't really understand how people don't have time.
Well, we all have the same amount of time. It's how you schedule it. And I think the scheduling is important.
Scheduling is key.
I mean, I do like a bit of winging things, like just, you know, like what we're doing Saturday night. I don't know. Let's just go with the flows. Go out and see what happens. But my girlfriend can't cope with that at all. She has to know exactly what we're doing, or it just doesn't compute.
See, I like to know exactly what we're doing and when. Like, I like to know at this time we're going to be here for this. We're going to, you know, I like it very regimented. But my diary is planned within, like, minutes. So after dropping kids off, I know I've got 10 minutes where the traffic's still bad, so I do emails in the car for 10 minutes. And, you know, little things like that where you eke out these bits of time to do.
Yeah, that's time that we spent sat there in traffic. So
exactly.
You might as well do something constructive with it. And you've just, you know, reply to some inquiries you've had as an agent, you know, for example.
You can get
through three.
I do those at the gym as well. Like at the gym, if I'm doing like big lifts, I've got like 5 minute rest in between each thing. And I'm just going to sit there watching YouTube videos for 5 minutes. I do emails and I do YouTube comment replies as well. But then you also need the time off because you can't work nonstop solid.
No, I mean, I tend to, my time off tends to be Christmas. So I historically finish work for the year roughly about the 15th of December or whatever Friday falls closest to that. And I will not pick up a camera, a graphics tablet, anything till at least the 2nd of January.
Yeah, I take Christmas off, like probably a month.
That tends to be my summer holiday. Yeah. Hence the reason the fabulous tan that I have. So,
yes. We used to take August off as well because August was historically dead. But that's just gone out the window nowadays. People want to do work in August. So that's true. I used to take a month off in August, a month off in December. Then the rest of the year, I work 7 day weeks.
And of course, you've got the joys of school holidays to contend with.
Yeah. Although I'm lucky, my partner's also self-employed. So she deals with a lot of that because I can't just take off the summer holidays. I'd be bankrupt because it takes a lot of money just to keep the company running.
Mm.
And because it's mostly me, if I don't work, that's, it's quite a lot of money to make up. It's I was talking to another podcast guest we filmed with last week during the week whilst you were out at work, and I was saying that, like, you know, I won't go out for less than 10 grand, which seems like an outrageous figure to, like, go, well, I'm not going on set for less than 10 grand, but the cost of keeping this place means it's not worth doing work for less, which sounds ridiculous, because if I worked from home by myself, I could probably go out for a couple of grand.
Yeah, and this is down to something else that you touched on in some of your other videos. It's, as a baseline, as any business, whether you're full-time, part-time, whatever, it's still a business.
Yeah.
You have to understand what your operating costs are.
Oh, yeah.
Because how else do you calculate what you need to earn from what you're doing?
Yeah, and my company needs to make money and needs to make profit even before it pays my salary, which is something people don't get. They think it's just, oh, you're just the company. It's like, no, there is a physical company here.
Well, yeah, first you've got to pay your buildings, you've got to pay for your roof.
Yeah.
You've then got to put some money in the piggy bank for the company to pay for the building in lean months.
Yes, exactly.
And then the third consideration is paying yourself a salary.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the other way around. Exactly. You don't get paid first. You're always the last one to get paid.
Yeah, definitely the case. My work week's pretty standard. I do office hours. I do 9-5. Apart from Cheeseworth and Shirley to do like cubs and beavers.
And obviously shoot days are an exception.
I get in at 7 and I leave normally midnight.
Yeah.
7 till midnight on a shoot day. But like, you pay me that much money, I'll be here.
Yeah.
I'll be here functioning for the duration.
And there's nothing wrong with being mercenary about things as well. You know, it's a reality of life that you have to make money.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And everything's costing more and more. Everyone's feeling the squeeze. So it feels difficult to justify it. But like,
I mean, I find coming from, as a hobbyist into the world of sort of commercial work, that was the thing I found absolutely, and still to this day do, is so difficult to price yourself and give someone a quote with a straight face.
Yeah.
Because, you've always have that bit of imposter syndrome and all the rest of it. And so how much for this? And so much this much? And you kind of always like, Say nothing. Wait to see what they can say back to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons I have an agent. I'm really good at doing it for other people. I can walk into a room with a straight face to go 190 grand for that, because I know what it costs. I know what goes into it. I know what the expense is. And I also know what the skill set is. Like, to be performing at a level where you have an agent, you're in the top 0.1% of photographers. And of course, you get paid accordingly. You know, to be shooting birthday parties, I don't know, is that a good example?
Yeah.
Sports events. You know, the sports event, this is a good example of one. There's these sports events photographers who are like run by companies for kids' sports events, and they get paid minimum wage. And it's like, it's the same job. They're both photographers.
Yes.
But it's nothing like one another. Like, there's a whole like gamut of like what you can be doing in photography. And it's knowing your worth and knowing what you can charge, but also knowing when you can't charge it. And so we got some emails through last week for estimates. And I looked at the businesses who are asking for them, and I know they can't afford it, so I've not replied, which might seem rude. But the way you look at it from a bigger picture is like, if I reply to them to explain what my pricing structure is, that time I've wasted, I've got to bill to the next client. So, you know, it's like...
And then you've also got the consideration that won't be the end of the conversation, that they'll be in the chain. And again, back to scheduling and how precious your time is in these moments. If you have to spend, 3 hours on a to and fro email chain with somebody, you know for a fact there's no work coming at the end of it.
Yeah.
It makes sense to prioritise other things over that.
Yeah, which is why I don't take meetings. Like, until there's, like, intent.
Hmm.
Like, until there's an agreement on budget. Like, everyone's like, oh, can we have a meeting? Can we have a chat? Especially on the YouTube world. Like, all these brands want a meeting. I'm like, no, agree to pay my fee, then we'll have a meeting. I'm not chatting. Like, an hour of my day to, what, have a meeting and then go, no, you can't afford this. Like, that's not fair.
Yeah, it's almost back to when I was a traveling salesman, what we used to call back in the day sort of closing questions. It's, somebody's perspective, someone walks into a shop and say, hi, I'm looking for XYZ. Okay, how much do you want to spend on XYZ? And importantly, when do you want to buy it? Because if it's not today, then you're going to get much less of my time.
Yeah.
And you have to be that ruthless.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because while you're talking to someone who's, I'm going to buy such and such in about 3 months, there's someone else walking in with cash in the pocket ready to spend that today.
Yeah, exactly. And it is ruthless. And you do have to be ruthless though, because if you're not, like, if I took every phone call and if I took every like meeting request, I'd get no work done. Like, it just wouldn't be possible. I'd be forever chatting to people who have no money or no intention of hiring me, because they always want to talk.
Yeah, of course. I mean, being people, they've come to you with a project that they're very excited about.
Exactly, which is great.
Which is great. You know, and then that's how it should be. You know, it should be that level of enthusiasm. You know, as the client, you should be excited about what you're doing. And I think we sort of touched on it in sort of previous podcasts. It's, if you don't know what the going rate is in the commercial world, and it's like your first time, you know, you've got together with your mate, you've done a Kickstarter or something, and you've got a product, and you say, right, now we're going to get this to market, we need to get some photography done. You've got no idea how much that would cost. And it's, you know, it's no detriment to them, it's just that they don't know.
Yeah, we had someone send a briefing recently with a £200 budget. But this is one of the reasons why every time we get a briefing, I ask them, when do you need it by? What is your budget? And do you have a brief? And sometimes they go, we don't have a brief yet and we're not sure on budget, we're just finding out. I'm like, cool, that's it, I'll leave it there. I'm like, when you've got those things, get back to me. If you don't know how much you want to spend, I'm not wasting time, because it takes ages to put a budget together. It's not like you're just plucking your day rate out. It's like, we need to see the brief. We need to understand the brief. We need to work out who we need. We need to phone them all up and get estimates from them all. We then need to see their availability.
Like, they say synchronize calendars, make sure.
Yeah. It's a day or two's work to put an estimate together. And if you put an estimate together and it comes to like £75,000 and they come back and go, we've got £3,000. It's like, great. I've just wasted 2 days of my life. And it's not fair for them asking you to do that. So if they don't know what their budget is, I'm not talking to them. You know, if they're doing that thing where they're saying, we don't know, because they're trying to find out how much it might cost and trying to get the cheapest price possible, I also don't want to work with them. Like, just say how much you've got. So when I go, like, we're specking, Rob's going to make my car sound nicer in a few weeks' time. And I'm going to go into an audio shop and go, I've got this much money. What can I get for my money? I'm not going to go in there and go, what's the best you can do? How much you want to spend? Not paying.
And then, this is, again, it's all about, the right questions up front, you know.
Yeah.
You know, importantly, and it's the first thing, how much have you got? Because there's no point, you know, quoting, I mean, again, like any hi-fi system, you can spend anything from £100 to, you know, unlimited hundreds of thousands.
Yes, exactly.
So you need to know what ballpark you're in. And people say, doesn't matter, mate, money doesn't matter. I say, all right, it's £20,000. I don't spend £20,000, really. I'm like, well, okay, so money doesn't matter. You know, it's just trying to get as efficiently as possible into that window if you know exactly what they want, what they want to spend on it, and when they want it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what you want from those sorts of things.
And that circles back to good time management.
Yeah, good time management is key. And just staying on task and also ignoring tasks like firefighting tasks come in all day long. And some days we do firefighting, but most days I ignore it all and I focus on what I'm trying to get done. Like, you know, it's always a priority thing. But yeah, that's kind of how our working lives kind of pull together, which brings us through to a topic I want to discuss, because it is one of the biggest mistakes I see photographers making. And this is about quality of work and when it's good enough. Now, one of the questions Rob asks me every time we start an edit is, where is this ending up? Is it website only or is it going in the book? The book is the prints. Now, if it's website only, do you spend hours and hours and hours on it?
No, because you don't need to.
Exactly.
If it's only going on the gram, let's face it, that's going to go on... best case scenario, a 6.5-inch phone.
Yeah.
And you can't zoom in, you know, so there's a much different level of detail. And this is mainly down to the masking and such. Like, for example, the CD buns we've just done are four treatments and need to be high quality. So, of course, every little seed is masked out, to perfection. If that was going on Instagram, you can be a bit fast and loose with that sort of thing. You still have to, you know, make the thing look correct.
Yeah,
but you don't have to spend the same level of time. And the masking takes as much time as anything, really.
Yeah, and I think the big mistake I see photographers making is they spend ages doing one thing. So, like, I've got a lot of one-to-one people I work with, and the big habit I try to get a lot of them out of is, like, what have you done this week? I've took this one shot. I've been working on it all week. So how have you spent a week working on a shot? Like, I'm expecting something biblical, and it's awful because they've missed all the important stuff and just spent ages trying to get perfect sharpness and great rim lighting and catch lights and all this stuff that doesn't matter. And then they've spent like 2 days in post polishing a turd. And it's like, great. Like, the important thing in photography is to take a photograph and then move on. Like, we could go back into the office now and spend another 4 hours editing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Another day editing on those burgers. But I've decided that for the quality of the shots, for the time and money we've put into them, that's now it. We're calling that a day. We're done.
And now time to get the old creative juices flowing again and get on to what the next shot is.
Exactly.
I mean, it's having learned the lessons that you have now from this more subdued subtlety. Right. Yes. Now, where do I take that?
Exactly. So there's no point in spending more time on this because we can get better results by doing something else.
And that also underpins the importance of doing personal work.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're not doing personal work, you're never going to progress anywhere. And I used to live with this guy called Rob. And he always used to say, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing badly, which is a brilliant saying. And it's like, if you're thinking, oh, do you know what? Like for me, I need to shoot this portrait portfolio this year because it should be done by now and just haven't had time. And really, it's not that I've not had time, it's that I've prioritized other stuff, but I need to do it. And I just need to get on and do it. In my head, I want to build these elaborate sets. I need my new studio to be ready and this, that, and the other. But I can just go up to Boss Management in Manchester, take 5 different coloured Colouramas down, just bash it out. Like, it won't be as good, but it'll be good enough.
Well, and you've also got the expectation, for example, if I was to say the words Chinese Democracy, the Guns N' Roses album that took 20 years to make, literally terrible.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And that was the case of the record company pulling the plug and they said, look, Axel, stop it. Whatever it is, however finished it is, that's what's going out today. We've had enough. We can't bankroll this any further. And I think even diehard Guns N' Roses fans will argue it's not a good album. It's pretty bad. Certainly not worth the amount of time that they spent on it.
No, exactly. And, you know, you don't always know how bad your work is until it gets out there. So just get it out there. There's no point in spending ages on something like that. And it's definitely something we make sure. We always assess time and money going into a shot and edit compared to, one, what the budget was if it's a job, because we don't make every job perfect. Because if they haven't got the budget, they don't get the perfect. Like, you know, but also in personal work, like, is it good enough to go out? Yes, it reaches the level.
Yeah, of course. And again, understanding where is it going to go? If it's not going to appear on a billboard, you don't need to mask every single hair on a piece of fruit.
No, exactly. And then speaking of where it's going to go in social media, these are brilliant segues today. It's like I planned it in advance. Instagram, using your images for AI. Now, I don't know if you've all seen this, but there's been a spate of stories being shared going, I do not give Instagram permission to share my blah, 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 blah.
That standard chain letter that keeps popping up every year or so.
Yeah, exactly. Now, first of all, don't share it because it makes you look like you don't know what you're doing because you don't. And secondly, it does nothing. You've already agreed to the terms and conditions of the social media platform. Putting a post out there saying you disagree with one of them
irrelevant.
Doesn't change it. It's like entering into a rental agreement and then deciding you're going to pay a different amount of rent. It's not how it works. However, if you go into your settings, you can turn off the bit which lets them use it for AI. It's an option. You don't need to broadcast it to the world. Or we broadcast that bit to the world that you can do that.
Yeah, make a nice little video of that.
Yeah, you don't need to go and say, I do not give... It's happened on Facebook, doesn't it? I don't get Facebook. It
happens all the time on Facebook. Every time Facebook had an update of the T's and C's, the same old thing went round and it's the same thing. It's, you know, you have become the chain letter.
Yes, yeah, you are now a chain letter. You know, but people always ask me, they're like, oh, Scott, you don't worry about these social media things. It says that they've got unlimited license to use and reproduce your images. I'm like, no, don't bother me. Why?
If you're bothered by that, don't put it on social media.
Yeah, but if you want to get work... Put it on social media, like.
Yeah, I mean, it's you have to understand that anything you put out at that point is completely public domain.
Yeah.
So you know, if you've got stuff that you've shot for clients that you can't make public domain, don't go posting that on social media.
Yeah, I mean, my work gets nicked all the time. I find it all over the internet. Going like, I found some stuff that's been stolen, cut out, put onto a billboard recently. Obviously, build those people. We have stolen work everywhere. Like, you can't not share your work because people might steal it.
No, and it's like
not leaving your house in case one breaks in.
And, you know, I mean, the only way to, so not so much stop people copying, because they're going to do it. If they want to copy you, they'll copy you. But you just have to keep progressing and moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, someone, there's a smattering of people who literally copy my shots. Not my style, my shots. And then try and market it. And I know this, I've had clients contact me going, by the way, there's this guy in London who's literally copying your work. I was like, oh, no, so it's just similar style. But they're like, no, they've even placed the items in the same place, same items, same place.
Same brand of biscuit, for example.
Yeah, they've just copied the shot. Exactly. I'm like,
You know, imitation's the greatest form of flattery and all that.
Well, I don't know if I feel flattered by it. I mean, like...
If nothing else, you've inspired someone.
Yeah, you could send a cease and desist letter, but why?
Like, yeah, I mean, what will it achieve?
Exactly. Like, just stop copying my work. I don't really care. They're not going to steal my clients.
You know, and progressing forward, they've got to do that. It's like the David Beckham lookalike, that every time he has a new tattoo, he has to go and get the same one. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things, you have to keep evolving with it.
But it's like my new style of work with these burger shots going out. I'll already have them out for anyone seeing them. So if they copy them, they're already a few weeks behind me. And also, they probably don't have the same people looking at the work that I do, because I spent years getting to this point.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bother me at all, but it's... I think it doesn't bother me. It does bother me. It bothers me that people don't know that it's wrong to do.
Whether they know it's wrong and do it anyway, that's the there's that to consider.
Yeah, I don't think anyone...
Because it's far easier to copy a shot than it is to
create a shot. The idea is the difficult part. Doing the photographs is easy. But there's a few of those going around. There's one guy for ages who used to do it and tag me in it, and I was like, he just doesn't understand that that's not okay. But that's fine. Like, I'm not going to be a, you know... Well, I might be.
Yeah.
I moan about it in private. So I'm on a squeaky chair here. There we go. I moan about it in private, but not in public, like I'm doing right now. But there we go. So Insta360, fill me in, Rob.
Yeah, so again, this was a comment left on a previous podcast when we were talking about camera brands and how they push things and how things are marketed and, you know, the lack of transparency sometimes in what's going on. And again, on the back of that, you know, there's been pointed a lot to the, shall we say, alleged dubious practices by Insta360, where they're giving product to people, asking them to do a review, but also asking them not to mention that they've been given it. And if there's anything that you find that isn't good about it, maybe just don't talk about that, which again is... Well, first and foremost, on YouTube, it's breaking the terms and conditions of YouTube, because you have to clearly tell people, if it's a sponsored segment, you have to tell people that this was sponsored by Insta360, etc. So by giving these things to people to review as if they've gone out and bought it themselves, which they haven't, and then only to say good things about it and not to say anything negative, again, it's a bit shady.
It is. And whilst you're explaining this shadiness to me, what I'm trying to do is find an email I've had from a client, not a client, like a particular someone who wants me to review something. Because like I say, that is shady. Because that is, you do have to, excuse me, you do have to say, this video is an advert. This video is sponsored by, you know. So like, for example, if I'm talking about a bit of kit, well, I've got a watch near me. If I go, oh, here's my Apple Watch, that means that this is my Apple Watch. If I got given this watch to review, I have to say this video
is sponsored by Apple Watch
because they've given me this. It's called payment in kind.
Yes.
You know, and it's weird because certain areas don't have this rule, like sport. I was a sponsored athlete when I was younger. I didn't have to tell people that Asics trainers, can't really pronounce the pronunciation to be back then, gave me the shoes and paid me. I didn't have to say that. I just used to make sure people saw it. There's no bit where I went, oh yeah, I didn't buy these myself. So in sport, it doesn't happen. And also in sport, tennis rackets and bicycles are not the ones you buy in the shops. They're custom built and painted to look like the ones you buy in the shops. So, you know, you've got to be transparent on that. I think it's a bit of a short-sighted move by Insta360.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things. It's, you know, and you had a lot of the more sort of well-known sort of camera review channels kind of publicly saying that this is what happened, this is how I was approached, these are things that were said to me, therefore I no longer wish to have a relationship with Insta360. And again, it comes down to the credibility of that reviewer. If they were to go along with that, then, and again, like all things, you know, it's the internet world, cameras everywhere, at some point it's going to come to light that's what that reviewer has been doing.
Yeah.
And then immediately all the years of hard work to get that channel to the point where it was, all that credibility is washed out overnight because of one brand. So quite rightly, a lot of the more popular guys that I follow have been, well, okay, this is how we were approached by this company. We don't agree with this practice. Therefore, we will not be reviewing them. And this is why.
Yep, absolutely. And here you go. It's just a rant. I get a few emails a week. So this is, I'm going to miss the brand name out. Hi Scott, which is always a good sign that they've got my name, because normally it codes into Hi Tin for Tin House Studio. I'm like, nice one. Hope my email finds you well. I am so and so from such and such. I'm very happy and appreciate all of the content on your YouTube channels. Would you like to try our new lens? We have We're looking to do a long-term collaboration with you. Let me know if you're interested and we can discuss further on this collaboration. If they use the word lit in there as well. Anyway, thanks in advance. So these emails again, I don't respond to. We get loads of them. But I could respond to these and get these two lenses for free. How much are they worth? Just to give you context of what I might be getting. 300 quid. Definitely not doing that. But yeah, there was somebody a £300 lens. Here's another one. Dear Tin House Studio. So this is going to everybody. I hope you're well. This is so-and-so from such and such marketing team. We're thrilled to introduce you to our new tripod. Loads of information in here. Not only is it competitively priced, but some cheap Chinese junk. Here's the specs of them. They only cost $100. If you have any... Oh, here's what they want. They don't even say what they want. They basically want you to do an advert for free. It's basically going, we'll send you this. Can you make us an advert? And it's always like, would you like to help promote our products? It's like, no, not really. Like, would you like to pay me to promote your product?
For sure.
Or I will review a product if I want to. Like, I would review these Rode mics in a year's time once I've used them enough to know if they're good. No one can review a new product properly.
No, it's, as I say, the reviews I tend to favour. And again, we do name drop a bit, Mr. Philip Bloom.
Yeah.
Because he's always the last review out, usually 6 months down the line.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a proper real life working review of things.
Yeah.
Because anyone can sit there and read the spec sheet and sure, but you know, how reliable is that camera in warm conditions, cold conditions? None of this is a known factor until you've actually used it in the field for a length of time.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's such a shady world. Like watching any product video of a new product on the internet, you basically have to assume there's bias.
Yeah.
If it's just come out, there's bias.
As I say, even on a personal level, you will have some bias. I mean, I've used Canon cameras from day one.
Yeah.
For initially for stills and video, moved over to Blackmagic for video. Amazing upgrade in terms of video quality compared to what we were getting previously. But it took me a good year, and I would genuinely say a year to learn how these things actually operate and what they actually like.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is an odd thing to say, especially when everything you thought you knew about cameras is now flipped on its head.
Yeah.
It's like if it's in a dark room, you want a really low ISO, and if it's in a bright room, you want a really high one. You're like, well, that makes no sense.
Yeah, I still don't fully get that. I often phone up and like, which ISO do I need for this again? And I think like, I mean, I try and be really transparent with my kit. So like if it's from Cambo, I've not paid for it. Apart from my first Cambo, which I bought with my own cash. And obviously Cambo were like, this guy here, I know that I've increased their sales dramatically. Because no one knows who they are. And it took me years to find them to fix the problem I had. I was trying to tilt shift.
It's a very, very niche product.
Yeah, yeah. So they let me have their stuff. I got given a lot of stuff, like secondhand stuff. My mate bought an old building that was a photo studio. It's my salon stand. I got given for free. It's not a Manfrotto purchase. I've got lots of Manfrotto stuff in the studio. All of it was bought secondhand because it's okay secondhand. Mm-hmm. You know, I think like, you know, Ben Q supplied all of my monitors over the years. I've never bought a monitor. I don't have any deal with them. I don't have to say anything good about them. For years, Tether Tools gave me free cables, but they don't anymore because I told everyone that their cables don't work because they don't work. And I don't want people going, Scott's got a Tether Tools cable, let's buy one of those. They don't work. They're rubbish. Absolute rubbish. Area 51's the way to go. They're much better. They're not perfect. I've had one sent to me, which have clearly been returns. They gave me some free stuff at one point. They sent it out to me and none of it worked. I was like, none of this works. And I just never heard back from them again. I got like a support ticket a while back going, might be...
That old chestnut, the support ticket.
Yeah, and then nothing. I was like, okay. I was going to do some like content for them because they're a small company, make good cables. but their customer service was awful. Cobra cables said they worked, turned up, they didn't work. One of them took a month and a half to arrive on next day shipping, and they wouldn't send another one out. I was like, it's clearly lost. Like, just send another one. What are you doing? And their customer support was atrocious at Cobra. You know, it's
that's another side of the coin. You don't know what customer service is until you need it.
Exactly.
It's like camera insurance. I'm with the company you used to be with, I think. And I've only ever had to make one claim, and they were absolutely brilliant. So I would highly recommend them.
See, the company I'm with now, because I needed bigger insurance, I made one claim that basically spoke to me like I was a thief. They're like, how did it happen? And I was thinking, it doesn't matter how it happened, because I'm insured, even if I lose my temper and smash it with a brick, because I got that cover. Because you never know. They were trying to get out of it as best they could, because it was quite a big sum.
Yeah, I mean, you genuinely feel it when that happens to you. You feel it's like you see on the movies where there's a room full of people just trying to find the loophole in your contract where they don't have to pay you, and that's literally their job.
I worry about that with like car insurance as well, though.
I think that was Saw 2. I think that was the basis of that, I think.
Probably. That sounds about right. But yeah, you know, anything online about a review that's something which somebody doesn't own and they've got brand new and it's got an unboxing element to it, and there's a link, there's bias. But I think most people know this. I don't think it's like news to people, is it?
No, and again, it's who is that review aimed at? It's generally not working professionals.
No.
It's aimed at the hobbyists and the enthusiasts. And the unboxing is actually very useful, because what do you get in the box? Doesn't come with a charging plug anymore. It just comes with the Type-C.
My Fuji doesn't come with a camera battery charger. I was like, what fresh hell is this?
See, that's useful information before you buy one to know that you have to put the order in for the charger while you do it. So those absolutely, there's a place for those.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I always think people know these things, but maybe they don't. You know, I think the inner workings of how YouTube works and like sponsorship and endorsement deals, and like, you know, I get paid by brands to go and do talks. So if I'm at the photography show doing a talk, that brand is paying me to be there. And I have to be careful with my business that I don't choose a brand that I wouldn't want people to buy from, because people might buy it because I use it. So, but I am fortunate enough to make enough money from other means of income that it's not like a concern. Whereas if this was my full-time gig, I perhaps wouldn't be as ethical, because money, I need money.
There's nothing wrong. You know, people make money how you will, you know. That's fine, but just be honest about it.
No, exactly. But I think, like, if I wasn't a photographer and I was relying on this for an income, these emails here, I'd be replying to them and getting money out of them and doing these reviews, because it's easy money.
Yeah.
I can fully see why you do that. And it's great me going, I wouldn't do that. I said, but I've got a full-time job as a photographer. Like, I don't need to do it. If I needed to, I would. And I do take on the odd bit of kit from people when it's good.
Yeah.
Or when they let me do something ridiculous with it, which is very rare. But yeah, I think the only stuff we've got in the studio at the moment that we've been given are some coal board lights.
I remember those.
They keep sending them. So I did one review for them when I first started, and I just keep getting a new light every time it comes out, and I just give it to a local student. I don't make any videos anymore. They're all the exact same thing. But yeah, apart from the Cambo stuff, I've got my nice big boom on, which is really useful, actually. Got that out in the last shoot.
Whereas I've literally paid pound notes for all of my stuff. There's not a single thing being given for free.
Well, you say it's for free. I've got to pay tax. I might even have to return the Cambo stand. They didn't really tell me. They were like, here, we'll send you this. I know that the camera's not mine forever. It's on loan. But I've got another one, which is mine, which is the less good one. But now I want the good one. So when that one goes back, I'm going to have to buy one anyway.
Yeah, see, they knew what they were doing. They're teasing.
I'm hoping they give me a good price on it. It's a weird one, isn't it? The way the marketing world works.
Honesty is the best policy. That's, I think, the takeaway from all this. It's, you know, just be honest about it.
Yeah, I always try and make sure that I'm as clear as possible.
As my dearly parted daddy would have always said, it's that, you know, the truth hurts sometimes, but the truth is always the truth.
Yeah.
And you can't go wrong with the truth, because then the truth will never come back and bite you.
No, exactly. You don't have to sweep it under the rug with all the other naughty bits we've been up to, you know, over our days. But anything to add this week, Rob, as we wind things up?
No, so this is, you know, the next job is obviously put this together. This will be our first multi-cam shoot. So
We'll see if people actually appreciate it.
Do stick a comment in the below bit.
Yes, the bit down.
If you like it.
If not, we'll make our lives much easier and go back to single camera. That would be
top and tail it.
Yeah.
Sort the sound out.
Thought we'd have, yeah. Yeah, and just touching on that before we do wrap up, we do try and add something, what I do, every time I do a new bout of YouTube videos or anything, I try and make one element better. So the last episode of this we did, we got the new mic setup sorted. This episode, we've added cameras.
And new boom arms.
Yes, these are good.
Again, he was commenting that your face was completely obscured by the previous desktop stand.
About that. I was like, oh, no one's going to mind. It's just a podcast. But no, people do mind. So took that on board, got some booms. Now we've got multicams. And then I guess next week, we'll probably work more on the structure. Now, I think we've got the nuts and bolts of podcasting sorted. Now it's the actual content we need to work on. So these are early day podcasts. These are very much...
And then we can progressing the set, put some fancy RGB in and all that good
stuff. Well, I think the podcast will move next door to the new studio because that will be permanently clear. This will be more my creative zone. We'll do a big studio tour when it's done. Maybe I'll document the build.
Yeah, I think vlog it. Be interesting. Yeah,
do people still do vlogs?
Yes, I think.
Yeah, I'll vlog it. Nice one. All right, then, I'll leave you all there and I'll see you all next week for the next episode.
Adios.